Live. Welcome to Random Movie Generator, and welcome, David.
Thank you for having me. So I'm ready for I've got my scuba gear on, and I'm ready for a deep dive into the ocean of Coen Brothers cinema.
Well, this is a different type of episode. Like you said, this is called the Deep Dive series. So every so often we'll do a deep dive episode. And I gave you a film. We did watch it. I gave you a film that I really like, and I'd love to hear your views on it. That's the angle of this.
Wonderful stuff. Absolutely. I saw this when it first came out in the cinema.
So the film is...
Very true. Let's announce
it. No Country for Old Men.
Absolutely. No Country for Old Men. Coen Brothers film came out in...
How are you, David?
Good. I'm in good spirits, and I'm chomping at the bit to chat about this movie, because I think there's a lot going on with it, certainly.
What interests me, David, is if I give you films that I really like, maybe that's the angle... And if you don't like them so much, that would be a lovely little angle.
Well, this one is a case of... I saw it when it first came out in the cinema, and I was very underwhelmed the first time I watched it, massively. I didn't quite...
Can I tell you my experience, David?
Yeah, go for it.
This is a film that I always remember how I felt when I watched it. And my main memory was I had to turn it off after about 45 minutes because I found it so stressful. I had to have a breather for 10 minutes. I was loving it so much and in so much sort of fear for James Brolin that I had to turn it off and just make a cup of tea. So I absolutely didn't find this underwhelming.
So this is like one of your number one movies.
Oh, it might be my favourite movie. It's in my top five.
Oh, my, there we go. Well, you're not alone. I mean, it was the Oscar film. The bizarre situation I had, I was looking back at the first time I saw it, and it's one of those bizarre things with memories. I don't really recall when I saw it now, because I always had the idea that... I had a very crisp image in my head that I saw it at university, and I went to Southampton Harbour Lights to see it, and I saw it with all my university friends. Afterwards, they absolutely loved it, and I thought, oh God, you're just a bunch of pretentious uni types, you know, even though I was at university too, because I found it...
Is that what you thought?
Well, I just found it very underwhelming the first time I watched it. It kind of sent me mixed signals. I was expecting a different type of movie, really. But the thing is, it's a bizarre one how your memory really misguides you, because this came out in 2006. And
2006, so I was... What was I? 32.
So I wasn't at university, that's my point. So I don't know how... So it's...
Interesting.
I really link this to university. And I would have left university 2001. So I've got a whole fake memory linked to it. But when I watched the film, you know, I recognise it. So I obviously have, you know, I'd watched it. But it subverts a lot of narrative expectations, more so than the Coen brothers ever had. And some people enjoy that, how it zigs and zags. But it shows that certainly back then I was a real mainstream man. And I think I was...
He's a mainstream man.
I'm a mainstream
walking
man.
Walking down the road is a mainstream man. Walking down the road
is a mainstream.
He's got a cigarette in his mouth. He's a mainstream man.
Living a formulaic life. The mainstream man's got to break out of that prison sometime, though, isn't he? He's got to take his hand out of the mainstream sand.
It's weird you say that, because I have no memory of that. I have no memory of going, oh, this is zigging and zagging. For me, it just gave me one massive adrenaline rush. And whenever I think, right, I want a thriller, I want something that really pumps my nads, I go, I need what I felt that night watching No Country for Old Men.
Well, I'd say there's two set pieces which are superb. Do you know what I mean? They're absolutely amazing. But then after that, it kind of... I mean, don't get me wrong. Second time I watched this, I watched it with a different mentality. And I got a lot out of it. I wouldn't...
Okay. Yeah, sorry, go on.
No,
yeah,
you
yeah.
go for it. Go for what you're going
to
say.
No, no, no. Well, I was just thinking, where do we go? Let's go back to this. Who's it? Who directed it? Who wrote it? Where's the story from? Who's in it?
Absolutely. It's an interesting one in the sense that where the Coen brothers were in their career at this point is really important, because they had just gone on a wild streak of hit after hit, you know, Raising Arizona, Barton Fink, Big Lebowski. You know, they were real auteur darlings of the time. But then they hit a massive dip where they did, I've got it written down here,
Are you asking your assistant?
I am asking my assistant, absolutely.
What's she called again?
I've forgotten her name, actually, from the last podcast, which is quite poor. That's not sexist, well, that's just she's poor there. Memory. Sorry, just very briefly, just trying to get her eye contact. Do you want to take your headphones off, or your AirPods or whatever? I do know your name, but I just need to have your entire name because I'm doing my human resource document. So if you could just tell me. Alicia. There we go, it's Alicia.
Okay. Well, you sacked the last one, did you?
I didn't actually. It's the same person. So
it was Alice.
It is Alice, not Alicia. There's an echo in here. There's an echo in this room. It's a lot longer than you think. Alice, thank you for your work.
That's what she said.
She certainly
okay,
did.
Let's get to that.
And she was being sarcastic, I think. You know, I'm not a fool. Let's have a look. So what we're looking at here, yeah. The three films after their big run was Man Who Wasn't There with Billy Thornton. And that was a bit overly pretentious. It didn't do well at the box office. Then the Coen brothers tried to be more mainstream with their mode of comedy. And they did Intolerable Cruelty with...
Into the microphone, please, David.
Sorry?
Into the microphone.
Be professional, Mr. Edwards, for God's sakes, with George Clooney and Catherine Zeta-Jones. And then they did the Lady Killers with Tom Hanks, the remake, which a lot of people say is the worst Coen brothers film. So they were going through their Spielberg always hook kind of period. They were going for a big old slump. So they were looking around for a project, and Scott Rudin, the producer, bought the rights to Cormac McCarthy's No Country for Old Men. So they were very much part of what they call a package when a producer buys the book, then gets the directors involved, because this isn't a Coen brothers original idea. This is a book already. And then he was getting Tommy Lee Jones involved as well. So this is very much a Scott Rudin kind of vision, if you like, which involved the Coen brothers. But obviously when the Coen brothers got involved, they had their auteur style. And it's them going back to what they're good at, these kind of heist movie thrillers. Because the last two films, they were trying to do sort of comedic mainstream studio movies. And they were more going back to their indie thriller route. Although it has to be said, one thing for No Country...
Did you say thriller-roo?
Thriller-root.
Oh, thriller-roo. Thriller-roo.
But I think...
Thriller-roo.
Absolutely, this is going to be a thriller-roo, boys.
I'm going to order a thriller-roo.
Absolutely. That sounds like a cocktail, doesn't it? I'll have a thriller-roo, and then we'll have a sex on the beach afterwards, if crying out loud. Absolutely. Once again, there's a lady... There's a researcher female beside me.
A red-headed lady to your right.
To my right, very tall, and she knows her rights, which I think is a good thing, definitely in today's age. Scott Rudin put it together, and it's very much a case of the Coen brothers getting back to their roots, but it's quite humorless, really, for a Coen brothers film. There's a few quirky moments, but it's almost they drop the whole comedy element. There are a few kind of ironic, tongue-in-cheek moments, but it's quite dark on the whole.
David. So we got people watching live in YouTube.
Are we?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Lovely. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Hi, everyone. Thanks for
Bonjour.
Joining us. Sam. Now, Sam J is watching.
Oh, yes.
And he says, apparently, McCarthy wrote No Country for Old Men as a script first.
That is correct.
But no one would make it.
Absolutely.
So then he made it into a book, and then the Coen brothers adapted that book.
Absolutely, you are quite right. I read that recently as well, that he actually adapted it into a script. and it got absolutely nowhere. I suddenly thought to myself, you know, how different is the Coen brothers to his original script? McCarthy's an interesting guy. He was poverty stricken when he was trying to become a writer. It was quite horrific. And his first wife divorced him because he demanded that she just get a job, even though she had just given birth to their first child and was dealing with the child, because he just wanted to focus on his writing. So, yeah, his output was incredible. Yeah. So he's writing scripts, novels. He was a dedicated man. He was a priest of literature. Very much the case.
So I was just reading. Billy Hay said, I watched it and I had the same experience as David on the left, minus the cup of tea.
Minus the cup of tea.
Are you David on the left?
Am I right or left? I don't know, actually.
I don't know.
I'm just saying.
I don't know.
Well,
I think you're drinking tea, so.
Oh, yes.
I can't believe this is just not a unanimous feeling towards this movie.
It is unanimous. I mean, people love the film. It's seen as a modern day classic. So I am in, you know, you are surrounded by many a people in your taste there. One thing I would say about it, linking to what this. What was his name? Sorry, I would like to talk to people with their Christian names, not just some YouTuber, someone who's taken their time and energy to.
Which comment do you want to reply to?
The one who noticed I was sipping from tea and he greeted me.
Billy,
similar to Billy.
Oh, Bruce. No, Billy Hay. No, you are. No, he's talking to me.
Oh, right. Oh, he's.
Oh, right. So
he agrees with you.
He had the same experience as me. Oh, good.
Perhaps. There
for
we
me,
go.
David,
solidarity.
This is a modern day Terminator movie.
Yes, it is very much a modern day, and it's also got a Rambo vibe to it as well. It's almost got the idea of the Vietnam vet, you know, using his skills type of thing to get through different situations, but definitely Terminator, it goes without saying. But the thing is, it uses the framework of Terminator, but then subverts it and moves away from it. I mean, there's some massive Hollywood mainstream no-nos that are just, you know, incredible. I mean, the other thing is, the film comes to an end so quickly, so suddenly, sorry, not quickly, suddenly. I thought my DVD legitimately, cinema reel, wherever it was I watched it, had broken. And I'm not saying that as a sarcastic comment. I was like, why has it gone to black?
Let's tell people who haven't seen it, who are listening to the podcast, and we love you to bits. What's the film about, David?
It is about Llewellyn, played by Josh Brolin, and he's a cowboy. It's a noir western. It's a chase movie, and it's definitely got a Terminator-esque vibe. And there are three men in this tale. Josh Brolin, who, when I went to see it, I saw him as my surrogate self, my protagonist. If you're going to take the Terminator metaphor, my Reese Kyle, you know, the guy taking on the Terminator. And he lives in a trailer park, low on money, married to Kelly MacDonald, the female actress in the Trainspotting films, but does an incredible American accent. He comes across two cars with shot up men in because it's a drug deal that's gone wrong. And in this way, it's very formulaic in the sense you've got a MacGuffin, an object that motivates the plot in the form of money that he's going to now take because he's obviously on hard times. So you have that element.
And do you not get that feeling as soon as he takes that bag of money, you go, oh dear. Because in the first 5 minutes, they've set up Javier Bardem's character.
They have, very true.
Who I think he manages to kill a couple of people in 5 minutes in a brutal, gruesome way.
Well, the most brutal one is definitely with the arm chains, not the arm, the handcuffs, where he gets the policeman on the floor and it's one take and he just strangles him. And also his selected weapon of choice is the cattle gun, isn't it? Where they basically put large bits of metal through their people's brains, like you're going to kill a cattle and sell it to McDonald's. So he literally sees human beings as animals, doesn't he? Just to turn he sees them as flesh puppets and just cuts off their strings.
Yeah, and I think the second murder, he just stops someone, a member of the public, just driving along the road. He pulls up in a police car, gets him out of the car, and then just...
Yeah, simple as that.
Ruthless.
Incredibly ruthless, like a robot, the whole Terminator element. And there's no fancy kind of like gun going off, any Hollywood cliche. It hardly even makes a sound, does it? It's just an air pressure cylinder.
Can you do the sound? And again.
Is it big? It really is like. Are you making a sound now? Or? I'm listening to you. I'm trying to get some pointers from yourself.
Yeah. So Josh Brolin finds this sort of drug deal that's gone wrong. Finds a dead man under a tree with a bag of money. Takes the money. Then what?
Then Sugar, Javier Bendan. I can't quite pronounce his name. Apologies.
Sugar?
Sugar is the name of his actual... Sugar is the name of the actual character. So he sounds like a stripper, like, come over here, Sugar. But in actual fact, it's done with a European slant or twist, if you like. So it sounds Sugar. A bit more Sugar. There we go. When I'm next at Tesco's, I'm going to ask people, where is the Sugar aisle, please? Where can I find the Sugar? So you've got that element, which is a lot of fun. He's now after Josh Brolin. And then you've got the third person, Tommy Lee Jones, who's trying to tail them both, because everywhere they go, bodies are found as they have their Terminator-esque man-o-man chase through the streets of Texas, ultimately.
Let's talk about Javier Bardem's character's hair.
Yes. It's got like a 70s Grange Hill vibe to it. It's like a bowl cut.
Now, what that feels to me, David, like a very brave choice by the Coen brothers. I'm pretty sure I read an article where they said the first time he walked onto set, just everyone pissed themselves.
Yeah, oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely.
But to go with that choice, and it's so good.
Well, it's almost so like good. He's a robot, but he's trying to dress in the contemporary retro nice. Mode, isn't he? He's trying to wear the slightly long collars. He's trying to sort of wear the denim. So he sort of fades into society. But obviously, you know, fashion isn't an algorithm to that extent. And he's robotically trying to execute a look, but he's not quite fulfilling it. The other thing, in the novel, there's hardly any description of what he looks like.
Isn't
no,
there?
No, there isn't. So the
have you read it then?
I haven't, no, but just from people's reviews.
Oh.
So the Coen brothers are really given clear license to do what they want. But it just makes him even more off-kilter and psychotic, doesn't it? This kind of bizarre. Mm. And also, he's trying to be fashionable, but he's all about function. So I can imagine him just putting that bowl on his own head on a chair and just cutting around it. Like he's getting pastry off the top of a cake or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Every now and then sorting out his hair. It's
So the hunter becomes the hunted.
Absolutely.
And did you not find it so incredibly stressful?
Yes, I did. There was two occasions I did. When Josh Brolin goes back to the car, because he's going to get the guy's dying.
Wonderful.
And the thing is, it's so well filmed and so stressful because the drug dealers return and they chase him through the night. Thing is, it's act one. Josh Brolin's not going to die. You know, his mug is on the poster and everything. But
is that what you're thinking then when you watch it?
No, I'm not, because it's so well put together. I'm actually worried
for
myself.
Yeah, because I'm not thinking that at all.
No, not at all.
I'm,
so it shows.
I don't know where it's going. Yeah.
100%. It's like, I don't think you're going to survive this, mate. I don't think you're going to outrun this lot. And then you have that amazing bit where he's been hiding out in the outback all night. He wakes up the next morning. They find him again. And then you have that amazing bit where he leaps into the water to get away from them. And their dog chases him. Now, when I first saw it, it shows how ridiculous I was mentality-wise. I thought Josh Brolin was going to save the dog because I thought the dog was drowning and they were going to be friends. I know it's ridiculous. I thought that. Absolutely nuts. But when I realised the dog, not the second viewing, that was the first viewing, but when you were...
And you came out of the cinema on the first viewing looking down your nose at people.
I know, good grief. Well, clearly it was above my head, wasn't it? It was massively above my head. I was expecting a far more mainstream film. I'm quite embarrassed I even revealed that about my dog expectations. But it's a case of... the second time you watch it, you obviously realise the dog is actually still chasing him. And I've never seen that image before, a man being chased by a dog.
In the water.
Yeah, in the water, both of them paddling frantically away from each other. And then you have that amazing bit of editing where he's having to load his gun as a dog gets out of the water and tries to attack him, which is really well edited and put together, incredibly so. Well, the other good one is when, unless you've got another scene, don't let me butt in.
No.
But, when Sugar first finds him in the hotel, and just the amazing piece of... well, one of the good things about Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? No Country for Old Men is a very... get the right film.
You really malfunctioned. Absolutely.
No wonder I didn't like it. We're talking about two films. He was like C-3PO drunk then for a second, wasn't it? When he turns up and he's outside Josh Brolin's door.
At the motel.
At the motel. And he does that amazing thing where he rings the reception up and you can hear it ringing in the background and no one picks up. So he knows he's dead. And there's an amazing lecture that a lot of people reference with really good script writing. It's by Andrew Stanton, who directed
Finding Nemo.
Absolutely. And he talks about the 2x2 effect. And that's when you don't tell the audience, you leave little crumbs for them to make the connections. So for instance, when he's ringing up the receptionist, I'm like, why are you ringing up the receptionist? Are you going to order food or something while you're about to be killed? But then you suddenly realize, no, he had a conversation with the receptionist earlier. He knows he's downstairs. And he's not picking it up. And you get that a lot with No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, you do.
Lots. And it stimulates you, Andrew Stanton says, as a viewer, because you're doing not homework, but you are doing a bit of work. You're making the connections yourself and you feel a bit good about yourself. Spielberg talks about it a lot. Let the audience come to the conclusion. Don't give it to them, sort of thing. Like, for instance, when Sugar comes out of the house.
Sugar. It's really putting me off.
I know, I thought it was odd.
I know. Anton Sugar.
When he comes out of Kelly McDonald's house, you don't know if he shot her or not.
Oh,
but
God.
He checks his boots, and then you make the reference to the previous scene that when he shoots people, he's always worried that he's going to get his boots dirty with blood. So when he checks his boots, it's like, no, he has shot her, he has killed her, and you make that connection.
Are we ruining it? Well, this needs a spoiler alert, doesn't it? This pod.
I guess with a deep dive, it's going to have
when
spoilers.
You got a deep, exactly, absolutely, a deep dive, yeah.
You can't just give a basic level review. You're digging deep. You've got your cinematic shovel out and you're going into archaeology mode. You're going deep.
Yeah.
Another interesting...
That motel reminds me of Terminator. There's a motel in Terminator.
100%. It's totally...
Yeah. Don't shout at me, David.
Absolutely. Keep your voice down, Sunshine. You know, we're into Cockney mode then. But no, you're completely right. The whole of that scene is what I thought the rest of the film was going to be about. Do you know what I mean? I thought you'd get another version of that.
Right.
So, I mean, it's completely nuts. I mean, we're doing spoilers, but I mean, one thing that completely threw me the first time I saw it, which severely subverts any Hollywood storytelling expectations, is that Josh Brolin, your hero, is killed quite early into the third act, and it's not by Sugar, it's by a random bunch of gang members linked to the money, and you don't even see him killed. I mean, how nuts is that? As an audience, I was like, hello, where are we going with this? So your main man's gone.
Yeah.
Absolutely surreal.
Yeah, strange, isn't it?
But there are...
Did you find that very, very, very frustrating?
Disorientating and then frustrating and confusing. It was almost as though I was sitting down to eat chicken, but it just tasted of, I don't know, porridge. I was confused. Do you know what I mean? I was like, I'm eating this food.
Does chicken taste like porridge anyway? Sort of does, doesn't it?
I don't think so. Because, I mean, porridge is oat. I don't want to be controversial. Don't want to start an argument.
Yeah, porridge. You have a bowl of porridge, it tastes like chicken.
That's going to be maybe in a prison. You know, it's been mixed in with a gruel or something like that. You know, there's a possibility. But I have a lot of sugar on my porridge, so it'd be very sweet chicken.
Do you? How much sugar?
Do you know, I never know because I think don't have too much sugar.
We're talking tablespoons?
High heat tablespoons of sugar. So it's not just like a conservative amount. It's a very liberal.
Mini mountains.
Mini
of
mountains.
Sugar.
Mini Mount Everest.
How many tablespoons are we talking?
Throughout, I keep adding more. So it might be 4, which isn't good.
4 at the start and then 2 or 3.
No, 4 throughout.
4 heaped.
4 heaped.
That is fucking terrible.
I know, it's terrible. Dude. It's best just to go with syrup at the beginning. That's what I've learned. And leave the sugar in the kitchen. That's another pointer. So it's not there for you to dive back into. It's gone.
Yeah.
But that is horrific.
So this second time of sitting down watching it, David, how does it compare to some of the movies that Mandy has randomly picked for you on a Saturday? Are you sitting there going, oh, I'm not feeling this?
No. I watched it in one go. It was very, very good. I knew the ending was going to... So I came to the ending with new eyes. And it was more intriguing. It was because in so many ways, it's very 80s action Terminator-esque. I mean, there's one bit where he even operates on himself in a motel room.
Yeah.
Just like the Terminator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's another proper almost Arnie moment.
But isn't there another bit with a tracker where he's just looking at the motel room?
Yeah, definitely. You could hear the tracker beep, 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 and it's getting closer and closer. And there's an amazing bit when Josh Brolin's in bed and it's all going through his head. And he thinks it's ridiculous how he knows where I am all the time. And he finds a tracker in the actual case of money, which is really good. The other one is when Sugar is badly injured from that gunfight we're just talking about, when he finds him in the motel, and then he blows up a massive car which just explodes in the background, so everyone leaves a pharmacy and he can just wander in and grab what he wants so he can start operating on himself in his hotel room. And I mean, that's like something out of an 80s action film. That is
so good.
Do you know what I mean? But then after that, you then go into the third act and it subverts all those expectations. I was expecting a third, crunch down with him, Lewin, Josh Brolin, and Sugar, but it just doesn't happen. It just kind of, I mean, the whole theme of the film is about fate, or are we just living in a world of chaos? And the film is very much the idea that life isn't a neat Hollywood plot narrative. We're not Luke Skywalker. Do you know what I mean? You know, you can just be randomly shot. I mean, Josh Brolin is almost killed like he's an extra in his own movie.
Do people get shot in Arundel?
I've heard of muggings, but I haven't heard...
Have you?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
What sort of muggings?
Basically around alleyways to get to the car parks a lot of the time. There's some
in
dark
Arundel?
Oh, absolutely. Quite
well,
right.
Not a knife point.
I don't know if there was a knife involved, but there would have certainly at least been, I don't know, a brick and a pair of socks or something. There'd be some kind of improvised weapon. Do you know what I mean? But
do you feel safe walking the streets of Arundel?
As long as I'm not going through alleyways, I'm in a high street, and I'm okay then. But I think anywhere, if you're on your own type of thing, people might see you as cheap pickings type of thing.
Mm. Can you imagine Javier Bardem walking around Arundel doing this? I can't.
I think he'll go wherever the money is, wherever the contract is.
Yeah, I think you're
simple
right.
As that. I think he'd happily wander into the co-op and start flicking a coin and saying, heads, you're dead, tails, you can live and serve another customer.
Now that scene, David. Now that scene.
Absolutely.
Now that's a lovely scene.
Go for it.
What were you going to say?
I was just thinking, obviously, the whole coin flip thing is the idea of, is there fate or is it just chaos? What did you think when you left the film? Did you think, coin had travelled all the way through its life to be in that shop where he's about to shoot the shopkeeper if it flips on the right side of the coin? Or do you think it's just chaos and bad luck that he's wandered into that shop?
I would say chaos and bad luck.
And I think the end of the film kind of mirrors that, doesn't it? It's the idea that, our lives aren't Harry Potter or Luke Skywalker. It is all just random rubbish. And
I think so. I think we put it all in order to make ourselves feel better.
And I wasn't delivered that with the film the first time I watched it. It wasn't that neat, linear.
No.
I didn't get my strokes as a cat. A cat gets its strokes.
What were you going to say?
Not the stroke, not the NHS stroke, the feline stroke.
No, I wasn't thinking the NHS stroke.
What other strokes are there? The water stroke? Oh, my stroke in my... Oh, there we go. Absolutely. Darkened auditorium. things happen. Dear me, the imagination.
What's the water stroke?
That would be the front paddle or the breaststroke, isn't it?
The water stroke.
The lady stroke, the breaststroke. The water stroke, the aqua stroke. Cutting through the water.
That's an amazing film. It's a petrol station, is it? And he goes in and he flicks the coin.
And he says this coin started in 1959 and it's been travelling up to this point.
I don't know what you want, sir. Yeah, that's the shopkeeper. I think you better leave the shop, sir.
Did you think that was good?
It was good. You immediately feel very sorry for him. He's only doing his job. I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, sir. It's kind of like...
I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, sir. Well, the head or tail of... And I'm not sure, right? Why are you doing this with me, sir? Do you think you're going to be hell or deal?
There you go. I'll tell you, if it's a good script, it can transcend to all mediums, and it shows it could be a radio drama. That could be Radio 4.
You could imagine. But, so he gets away with it, which is, it's so tense, and he gets away with it, but then the coin flip comes back later with Woody Harrelson, is that right?
It does, yeah, absolutely.
And you know what's going to come. You know what's coming.
Doof. The cattle gun. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Simple as that. The other fascinating thing, talking about the actors, is it was originally nearly a very different cast.
Oh, someone said Heath Ledger was wanted.
Yes, he wanted to spend more time with his children, which you can't knock him for that. But the Coen brothers desperately wanted him. And the other one that was really interesting is Tommy Lee Jones's assistant, his deputy.
Yeah.
He auditioned for it 5 times and it was nearly his in the bag. But then...
Audition for what? Llewellyn?
Llewellyn's role. Sorry, I should have said that clearly. Llewellyn's role. And Josh Brolin, at the last second, gave it an audition tape because... with his Hollywood circle of friends, they told him that, you know, the Coen brothers are doing a Cormac McCarthy film. And Josh Brolin was on the set of the zombie film that Robert Rodriguez was making, Planet Terror. I've forgotten the name, sorry, Planet Terror. And he said to Robert Rodriguez, would it be possible for me to use a camera to film an audition during the lunch break so I can send it off? And Robert Rodriguez said, even better than that, we'll use a new Genesis camera, which is a big digital camera then, and I'll ask my friend to help us who's on set. And that friend was Quentin Tarantino. So Rodriguez lit and filmed it with this new Genesis camera, and Tarantino directed him.
No way.
No, that's exactly it. And then he sent it in, and...
David, that's a what? This is what I wanted on the deep dive. I knew you'd bring the goods.
Thank you. That's lovely to hear. That's going to send me to sleep
amazing.
With a smile.
That's a super little story.
And in some ways, it's great for Josh Brolin, because obviously Josh Brolin, he did The Goonies, and then he went to No Man's Land, and he's blooming good in this. He doesn't feel like this is his first like big star vehicle movie. He feels
was
like,
this
okay,
then, his big star?
Oh, yeah, God, yeah. He was nothing before this. He'd gone into
limbo.
He was in limbo. He was part of like Hollywood circles, but on the periphery. Like Robert Rodriguez had given him a role in Planet Terror, his zombie grindhouse movie. But he was definitely on the peripheries. That's what put him on the map. No Country for Old Men. So
I did not know that.
And
you're right. It says career decline.
Oh, massively. He did nothing after The Goonies, just bits and pieces, and that totally, you know, injected him into the mass consciousness. And then he got the role, took it off the deputy. You always just think, God, you know, that deputy must have thought, okay, I'll be Tommy Lee Jones's, like, you know, stooge type of thing, but my career could have been a lot different. A week after that, Josh Brolin was in a horrific motorbike accident. And, you know, obviously when he gets shot at the beginning, he's got that sling on. He needed that sling because he was actually dealing with a motorbike accident, because he nearly lost the role. And he said as he flew through the air after hitting the car, he thought to himself, I was nearly in a Coen Brothers film. This has ruined everything.
I'm just looking at his filmography, and you're right.
Oh, this
when
this
it hits No Country for Old Men, suddenly all these big movies start happening.
He wasn't a big leading man at all. That was the film that made him. I don't think even people realise he was the older brother in Goonies. I don't think people even made that connection.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all.
So it was a case of, it was a real random, tape that sent to them. And the Coen brothers, 1 minute to midnight, said, no.
Oh, my God. Sorry, David. It's him in the Goonies. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's the older brother with the band, the headband.
Yeah.
He does all the sort of weights and everything. And they tie him off and run off. But he did nothing after that, basically. You know, Sean Austin had roles, obviously. But nothing really happened to Brolin. Bits and pieces. But, you know, he became a proper... And it was quite late in life that he got this... Because he's in his 50s now. And he's great, you know.
55, he's 55.
He's great in June and all that, and Sicario. He's absolutely superb. The other one, Javier Bardem, can never pronounce his name, apologies, Sugar.
I beg your pardon.
Absolutely. Javelin Bardem, there we go. I can't remember, how do you pronounce his first name?
Javier Bardem.
There you go, done like a true native. He had a conflict, and he couldn't do the role, so Mark Strong had the role for 1 weekend.
No!
Yes, Mark Strong had it for 1 weekend, basically. He was ready to fly.
What do you mean, 1 weekend?
He was ready to fly up to America. It was his role.
And how did it.
And then the scheduling changed, and Bardem could get the role back.
Oh, my God.
But verbal contract wise, so there'd be a lot of people kicking themselves when that became the Oscar movie. A lot of people.
Oh, my God. Without Javier Bardem in that film, he is everything in that film.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Although I think Mark Strong would it have been as iconic? I don't know, but I think he'd have done a good job, certainly.
David, could I play the store scene?
Absolutely. Let's play it.
So could you set up the store scene, possibly?
Is this with the coin?
Yeah,
absolutely. So Anton Chigurh,
played by Javier Bardem,
wanders in looking for a trail to find Llewellyn, Josh Brolin, and whilst he's there, you know, he doesn't want he wants as less witnesses of people knowing that he's going around asking questions. But he plays this bizarre game of fate and destiny whereby he flicks a coin. And then he decides there and then if he's going to execute you or not.
I can't handle this happening with just an innocent member of the public. I can't handle stuff like that.
He's a very likable chap as well.
He's a lovely guy. He's been in that petrol station for years, family petrol
station. Yes, he says, my wife's just around the corner. You know, this is my wife's father's business and all that. It's very interesting.
Been there years and suddenly this dude turns up.
Out the blue type of thing.
Shall I play it?
Please do.
Okay.
How much?
69 cents.
And the gas?
Y'all getting any rain up your way?
What way would that be?
I seen you was from Dallas.
What business is it of yours? Where I'm from? Friendo?
I didn't mean nothing by it.
Didn't mean nothing.
Just passing the time. You don't want to accept that. I don't know what else I can do for you. Will there be something else?
I don't know. Will there?
Is something wrong?
With what?
With anything.
Is that what you're asking me? Is there something wrong with anything?
Will there be anything else?
You already asked me that.
Well, I need to see about closing then.
See about closing?
Yes, sir.
What time do you close?
Now. We close now.
Now is not a time. What time do you close?
Generally around dark, at dark.
You don't know what you're talking about, do you?
Sir?
I said, you don't know what you're talking about. What time do you go to bed?
Sir?
You're a bit deaf, aren't you? I said, what time do you go to bed?
Somewhere around 9:30. I'd say around 9:30.
I could come back then.
Why would you be coming back? We'll be closed.
Yeah, you said that.
Well, I got to close now.
You live in that house out back?
Yes, I do.
You lived here all your life?
This is my wife's father's place, originally.
You married into it?
We lived in Temple, Texas for many years. Raised a family there in Temple. We come out here about 4 years ago.
You married into it?
That's the way you want to put it?
I don't have some way to put it. That's the way it is. What's the most you ever lost in a coin toss?
Sir?
The most you ever lost in a coin toss?
I don't know. I couldn't say.
Call it.
Call it?
Yes.
For what?
Just call it.
Well, we need to know what we're calling it for here.
You need to call it. I can't call it for you. It wouldn't be fair.
I didn't put nothing up.
Yes, you did. You've been putting it up your whole life. You just didn't know it. You know what date is on this coin?
No.
1958. It's been traveling 22 years to get here. And now it's here. And it's either heads or tails. And you have to say, call it.
Well, look, I need to know what I stand to win.
Everything.
How's that?
You stand to win everything, call it.
All right. Heads then.
Well done. Don't put it in your pocket,
sir.
Don't put it in your pocket, it's your lucky quarter.
Where do you want me to put it?
Anywhere, not in your pocket. Or it'll get mixed in with the others and become just a coin. Which it is.
Very nice too. Don't put it in your pocket.
What's that, sorry? What did you say?
Don't put it in your pocket.
Oh, goodness me. Put it in your pocket. Absolutely. Well executed.
No, don't put it in your pocket. Then it'll get mixed with the other coins. And then it'll just become a coin. Which it is.
Quite right. Quoting the classic. You are quoting a classic. Quoting a classic.
God. I just remember watching it. That there's a scene in Brian and Charles where Brian is in the store and Jamie Meachie comes in and talks to the store. The lady behind the counter was like directly taken from that.
Oh right, God, that's actual influence.
Apart from. You know, the coin chat.
Oh, God, yeah. But that's, I mean, yeah, it's just really well executed, isn't it? The other good thing about the film is there's just zero music. And I think I think there's a bit of music every now and then, just sort of ambience kind of music.
Oh, really? Is there no music
in
there?
There's no music in there at all. And also, very basic camera work in that scene, just your real standard shot, reverse shot, no music, and so much of it is... just shot, reverse shot.
A lot of
basic.
This going on.
And what's that? That's kind of like a...
the wind.
Oh, goodness me. So I'm not picking stuff off on your microphone, I think. I don't know.
Oh, aren't you?
Were you making the sound of the wind then, or...?
Yeah.
No, I can't hear that at all.
Can you hear me?
I can't hear...
I can hear that.
I can't hear you doing the wind.
Can anyone hear the wind? Hello? Am I here?
That last bit of wind. Very anyway. Slightly, very slightly. The main thing I can hear your words.
So could you hear me saying, stop putting it in your pocket? Could you hear that?
The first bit I couldn't, but then I could hear it a bit more. But no, okay. I thought I couldn't hear. And also, when you're making the sound of the cattle gun, I couldn't hear that either.
Oh, right.
I can hear that now, yeah, but earlier I was just like... If I've looked confused, it's because there's just no audio coming.
I'm so sorry.
No, don't. Do not apologise. I'm easily confused. I am an easily confused man.
So I would put this, let's be realistic, in my top 10 movies of all time. Not top 5, not 1, but I absolutely... Well, it might be, but I adore it. It's in my top 10. Do you understand why it's in my top 10, or do you look at me going, what the dickens?
No, I think second time watching it, I can definitely see where the merit is, 100%. Right. I still find Tommy Lee Jones's dream monologues at the end a bit empty. I mean, having said that, Tommy Lee Jones, he's an interesting one with the film as well, in the sense that he was the only one they wanted straight at the beginning, and they got him. But also, they'd... had loads of money put aside to have loads of flashbacks of Tommy Lee Jones's dad when he talks about the previous generation of the Western, and they'd got a whole warehouse and they covered it in snow, green screen, and they got horses in there, and they were going to film Tommy Lee Jones's dad back in the olden days of the Wild West holding a lantern. But apparently the Coen brothers were so impressed by his execution of the monologue. Yeah. On the actual set, they were like, just get rid of that warehouse. We don't need it. We're not going to film it.
David, I have to stop you here because we have breaking news.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
Someone's put it in the YouTube. This is breaking film news. Are you ready?
I am. Go for it.
Because this might shock you. Cillian Murphy and Emily Blunt have leave Oppenheimer premiere as actors launch strike.
Yes, I have heard the strikes happening. I didn't know those two had left the actual premiere. Dear God, I've read about the strike happening, but Hollywood are very nervous about that, aren't they? Incredibly so. I mean, the writer's strike's one thing, but if the actors put their tools down, it's like you literally can't film anything, obviously. And also, it's the end of promotion. They stop promoting things, hence leaving the actual premiere. So it's going to be problematic.
Right, David. So now's your turn to rate out of 5 Choc Ices, No Country for Old Men. Please tell us, how many Choc Ices are you going to give it?
I would give it 4 out of 5. I know it's not your expected 5 out of 5, being your personal favourite. I would say the first and second act kept me emotionally engaged, but then the third act kept me intellectually interested. It's like, okay, I can see what you're doing. This is interesting. It fits with the theme that life isn't this perfect little narrative. There's a lot of chaos and randomness involved, and that's why you're subverting and going away from Hollywood narrative expectations. So it makes sense. I know the ending's going to be not in keeping with Hollywood, so I was preparing myself for that. But I would say psychologically, I definitely change gears. And also, those dream monologues with Tommy Lee Jones, they don't quite chime quite as passionately inside me than they do for other people. I think it's interesting when he meets that old friend who's in that shack that he visits right at the end, Tommy Lee Jones. And Tommy Lee Jones says, things have got lost these days. People are just like violent for no reason. And his friend says to him, the Wild West's always been like that. It's always been an unforgiving place. For you to think it's just your era is vanity, to think that, things are just different for you and your generation. It's you that's old. It's you that's seeing things from a different perspective, type of thing. Yeah, that is good. And then he talks about his dreams, and I'm trying to work them out. I guess he's talking about his dad's time. And then we cut to black, and it's like, bloody hell, that's it. Au revoir. See you next time. Love, the Coen brothers.
Well, David, thank you so much for this week's, this podcast deep dive, second one of the series. We've done a Watership Down, and now we've done No Country for Old Men. Thank you very much for watching the movie for me.
Absolutely.
And giving us your take on it.
Thank you. And your take as well. Very passionate about the film.
Now, we're doing another We're doing another one next week or the week after?
Wednesday. We're doing one on Wednesday, then not that week, then the week after.
Now, I've given you two other... is it Wednesday or next Thursday? Is it Wednesday?
Yeah, I had to change it, unfortunately. It's
Sorry,
Wednesday.
I'll write
no,
that
no, no,
in
that's
now.
Fine. If you're okay with that, yeah. Wednesday would be great.
Yeah. So I gave you two other movies that I enjoy. What were they, and which one are you going to watch for next week?
I'm going to do Sylvester Stallone, 1987, Over the Top. Oh. Hand Wrestling Mania.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Over the Bloody Top.
And is that one of your kind of like favourites growing up?
Do you know what? I don't know how I feel about it, but I'm fond of it. I have really fond memories of it. I think I've seen it a couple of times, and I'd love to know from you whether it's utter dog shit, which I'm imagining it might be, or or not, or a special little movie.
It definitely reminds me, I'm not giving away what I think of it at all, because I haven't watched it yet, because I've been focusing on this.
Have you never seen it before?
Oh yes, definitely. That's what I was going to say, early kind of impressions, that it's very much an 80s video store movie for me. I always remember seeing the posters of it in video stores in the 80s. Him with like bizarrely a bird of prey in the background and getting ready to do a, wearing like a kind of vest. Absolutely. Yeah. He's got his own move, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, oh yeah. Do you know what? I'd love to watch it again. The arm wrestling contest at the end. Oh, it's just brilliant. It's basically, isn't it just Rocky with arm wrestling?
It is and it is.
Rocky with his son?
Yeah, I guess it is Rocky with his son. There are different dynamics in there, but you can tell why the studio said yes. Do you know what I mean? It's because it's got that Rocky formula, do you know what I mean? And the potential for a new franchise. And apparently he was quite passionate about developing it. It was a story near to his heart type of thing.
Right. Right, but they never made it. Anyway, this is for next week.
Absolutely.
David, thank you so much for this week's Random Movie Generator Deep Dive.
And thanks for opening my eyes and getting me to watch it again, because I think I would have avoided it. But after doing some research into it and watching it, you know, I wouldn't have given that 4 out of 5. So, I mean, you know, I really was unimpressed by it 100%. I was like, what's this? But definitely I can see the merits there, 100%.
Mm. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for watching live on YouTube. There's a fair few people in there. Gemma, Billy, Nicola, Dr. Greggles, Mike Rolls, Martin, Carl, Andy, David something else, David Pannell or Panel or Pinellian, Pinellian Dad.
Lovely.
Steve, Sam, JP. The Cardboard Giraffe, thank you very much.
Any any pointers about the film at all they've mentioned? Or I know we need to get going, but
no, we need to get going, David.
Oh, absolutely. it's we've come to a natural end. Don't drag it out, Dave.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people who just won't leave your house. It's like the party's over now, Dave. It's time to go. Here's your car keys.
Thank you, everyone, and sleep tight, and bye.
Au revoir, people. Take care.
Bye.
Sleep well. Have good
sleep. What do we do when it's night time?
I
had to say goodbye.
Like an owl, a hoot, like an owl's wing. Sleep well, people.